Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. And on today's program, we have as a guest, Representative David Lewis. David represents the 53rd House District, which encompasses most of Harnett County, including the city of Dunn, the towns of Angier, Coates, Irwin, and Lillington. David was born in Fayetteville and grew up in the Dunn area, in Dunn, and he earned his Bachelor's of Administration degree, his BA, from Campbell University. Of all the 170 lawmakers, state lawmakers, David was recently named the number one business-friendly legislator. And that is why I have asked David to be on the show today. And he currently serves as the chairman of the Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House Committee and Elections Committee and is well known for his work on the 2013 tax reform legislation. He is a tobacco and cotton farmer by trade and resides in Dunn with his wife, Michelle, and their three kids, David, Ray, Henry, and Tilly. And I want to share something that was on David's website that kind of was the catalyst for me asking David to be on the show. And he says, "I believe that North Carolina should be a land of opportunity where everyone can reach their God-given potential. This is best realized by advocating for entrepreneurship, supporting small businesses, reducing regulatory and tax burdens in order to grow the economy. Small businesses are the economic drivers of this state." David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lee. I'm very glad to be with you.
So let's talk about North Carolina as a hub of business activity, how we can grow the economy, and what's going on with the legislature to this point.
Certainly.
So what's on the agenda for the legislature in coming up that's going to benefit small businesses and Main Street? What are you guys trying to do?
Well, I'm very proud that we'll be able to reassemble here in April and begin to build on the foundations that we've laid. You know, we wanted very much, we started out when people gave us the opportunity to be in the majority in 2011, to make North Carolina a place where you could do business, you could and would choose to invest your time and your talent. And we began to take a look at trying to reform and reduce the regulatory burden that businesses and individuals face. Certainly, we are going to keep workers safe, and we're going to keep the environment safe, and we're going to keep the consumer safe. But what we found was really a patchwork of regulations where more than one agency oversaw certain things, and sometimes the guidance from those agencies would be contradictory. And we wanted to make sure that North Carolina law was in line with federal law so that businesses here knew what they would face each day. So you can certainly expect to see us continue to work on trying to streamline the regulations that govern how people do business here in the state. We're going to continue to look for ways to make our tax code more simple and fair and not make it a disincentive for people that want to work and want to better themselves and to move from their current economic situation to a different one, while at the same time making sure that our tax code takes care of those that are at the bottom of the income earning scale. One of the things that we're talking about now is it's actually called the standard deduction. Some folks call it, I like to call it the zero bracket, which means this is the amount of money that you can earn in our state before you pay any state tax. And since the Republicans, since the tax reform of 2011, you know, we have increased that standard deduction more than 250%. What used to be a family, if they married filing jointly, you could earn $6,500 before you paid any North Carolina tax at all. That amount is now $15,000, and that really helps folks know that you know that they can get a start out in our state and work. And it also makes, you know, folks like to talk a lot about our us having one tax rate for everyone. And what I point out to them is the fact that we have the zero bracket that you can earn up, you know, to $15,000 a year as married filing jointly without having to pay any taxes. You've got to kind of graduate that on the scale. So if you're earning $15,000 or less a year, your tax rate in North Carolina is not the 5.75, it's zero. And so I think you will see us continue those conversations about how can we make tax reform work to where we can continue to grow North Carolina's economy. And finally, you will certainly see us continue to put a focus on, pardon me, being able to retain and recruit good state employees and good teachers. So I'm very excited about the upcoming session and look forward to it.
So I have one question. In the upcoming session, are we going to get the balanced budget amendment on up for a vote?
Well, Lee, I'm not sure which balanced budget amendment you mean. You know, we always pass a
at the federal level, where we've been, you know, we've had several conversations here on the radio about HB 366 and trying to get that bill out for a vote, either a vote up or a vote down, so that we can start making Congress have to have a balanced budget too.
Well, I appreciate that question. I certainly think it would be a good idea for Congress to have to operate under a balanced budget. I'm not as familiar with that bill as I probably should be, and maybe some of your listeners are. You know, one area that I hope the General Assembly will act on is an area that will require Congress to have to actually vote on this myriad of federal regulations that are passed down by unelected bureaucrats that have a true cost to business and a true cost to being able to operate here in our country. So I do think you'll see our legislature willing to weigh in on some of these federal issues going forward.
Yeah, that balance between states controlling the federal government and keeping states' rights to regulate is an important one for all of us, especially for small businesses, I would say. So we have the election coming up, and we really don't want to get too much into the election aspect of it, but it is a critical election coming up for the country and for the state, and particularly when we're looking at the economy. Nationwide, we have over a third of the people out of the workforce, and yet we have a low unemployment rate. We have Main Street struggling to stay in business, and even some of the corporations and things. So how do we work with the legislature as small businesses, as private citizens, to equip you guys with the information you need to make the right decisions and get the right bills through the legislature?
Well, whenever you're trying to interact with the legislature, there is nothing more important than one-on-one contact. Contact that says, you know, here is the way things currently are. The law requires this of me. The economy requires this of me. My customers require this of me. And here's how the actions that you're considering could have a potential impact up or down on me and my ability to continue to be in business and to provide a good job. So certainly just making sure that all of us in the legislature understand that the laws that we pass have real effect on the people that we're sent up to Raleigh to serve. You know, a lot of times we study issues and try to make the best decisions we can based on the information available to us, and inevitably someone will come up and say, hey, you know, that change y'all made in so-and-so, I know what you were trying to do, but here's what actually took place on the ground. And so, you know, I myself try to hold town halls, and we do a lot of newsletters, and we try to get feedback through email, and just know that, and I think I can speak for all 170 members of the General Assembly, nothing is more important than somebody from the district giving you a call to say, hey, this is a concern I have, this is an idea I have, that carries more weight than everything else that we do.
So you represent primarily Harnett County, Dunn, as we said, Coates, Angiers, some of those areas. What are the biggest challenges for your district right now in terms of the economy, small business, veterans, all of those kind of issues?
Well, we're very blessed. We live in a very beautiful county. It happens to be sandwiched largely between the giant counties of Wake and Cumberland, and even to a little bit lesser extent, Johnston. And what we found is people tend to, you know, since the dawn of time, really, people have wanted to congregate with and to be around other people. And what we find is we have seen retail, and we've seen employment opportunities and whatnot go to the larger counties of Cumberland and Wake and Johnston. And very blessed that people choose to live in our county. We're trying to make sure, though, that businesses understand that we would be a great place to locate, too. The challenges that we face are, you know, we've got Interstate 95 that goes through the southeastern corner of our county, which is a big corridor and a big help. We've got to find a way to get better transportation through the center of the county. I'd like to try to work and get U.S. 401, which runs from Fayetteville to Raleigh. It is two-lane all the way through our county. We need to get that to be a four-lane road. Highway 55, which sort of is in the northeast corner of our state up near Andrew, that would be another opportunity for expansion, make it easier for jobs to come and for businesses in Harnett County to do business elsewhere. And of course, in our southeast corner of the county, we've got Highway 87 and the growth that it has seen transporting people and goods from Fayetteville to Raleigh has just been absolutely incredible. Hope we can duplicate that. So one of the biggest challenges that our county faces is helping the businesses that our citizens work at and shop at understand that we'd also be a good place for them to locate. So we want to maintain our warm, friendly, rural atmosphere, while at the same time be able to take advantage of the fact that we are, you know, we joined the largest military base in the world, Fort Bragg. We joined the County of Wake with the state capital. You know, there's just so many opportunities for us, and we've got to figure out how to capitalize on those.
So you're one of the best kept secrets in the state, is what you're telling me.
Well, you know, we are, and we've got a lot of great assets. You know, we've got a countywide water system. There are many counties in the state that can't boast of that. We're right on the Cape Fear River. In fact, we sell water to most of our affluent neighbors. So we'd love to be able to convince folks that you know, that we've got what they need right there in the county. In the county, I will say that I am a big believer, though, in regionalism in terms of trying to recruit and attract economic development. One of our initiatives from our county commissioner board is to try and develop some regional partnerships where we can not only produce raw agricultural goods, but maybe try to be able to figure out how to process them as well. And to gain the jobs that come from that. You know, we need to figure out a way that we can make sure that we get high-speed internet to all of the citizens in our county who want it. We need to make sure we can get natural gas to all the citizens in our county that need it. Those things, those quality of life issues also help help recruit and retain businesses in the county.
Definitely, because we love to shop and live in communities, and it's becoming more and more popular that we don't want to drive, you know, 100 miles to find what we're looking, but we still want that community feeling and to know, our local businesses. You said you were doing town halls and things of that nature. So what are your residents telling you are the top issues for them, not only in business and the economy, but just in life in general? What are you hearing?
Well, the top issue that we get feedback on is jobs. You know, I listened to your remarks earlier today, and, you know, certainly the jobless population is a huge challenge. But we also have a great number of people that are not jobless. They're working, but they're largely underemployed. And what they tell me is we've got to find some way to close, I know this sounds like a buzzword, but it's not, the skills gap. We've got to make sure our people have the skills they need that make them attractive to businesses and for businesses to hire. And we do that through investing in our community college and in various job training programs. I'm very proud. We have a great relationship with Central Carolina Community College. They not only have a full campus in our county, but they have satellite campuses all throughout the county that make it easier for folks to go and to get the training that they need. Of course, there's always a big concern about education. People won't, and I certainly understand and agree with, that the only chance we have of making tomorrow better than today is make sure we have the best educated kids around. And I want kids that go to school in Harnett County to be able to compete with kids that go to school in wherever else they're supposed to be having success, be it San Diego, California, or New York, or we've got to be able to educate our kids to where they truly can compete, not just with the kids that they look around and see in the classroom, but those from all over the country and all over the world. So without a doubt, the top two issues that I always hear about are not just jobs for jobs' sake, but perhaps jobs and better jobs, and also education. We need our kids to be able to learn. We need our kids to have the resources that they need. And so those are my constituents' top priorities, and they are mine as well.
Well, that makes excellent points, because I always hear from my clients when we're doing surveys, and the biggest challenge they have are getting qualified, motivated workers that show up, that have the skills that are there, and that they're lifelong learners, that they're continually honing their skills and wanting to advance. So being right there on the education and getting a good foundation, going into the community colleges and then on to a university if that's appropriate, it's making sure we find that right balance of the skills. We need the plumbers, and we need the car mechanics, we need the nurses, we need the doctors, and we need the business owners, which is a big challenge. In North Carolina, we have a lot of incubators. We have a lot of spin-outs from the universities. We have a lot of garage inventors and mom-and-pop shops. How do you see the economy affecting them, and what are you hearing from your main street there in Harnett County that are the challenges, besides regulations and finding, you know, the right employees? Is it tax issues? Are they more worried about security? Are they worried about banking regulations? Just what is the biggest challenges for Main Street business?
Well, put simply, the biggest challenges that Main Street businesses face are the myriad of reporting and regulatory requirements. Don't mean to sound like a broken record. You know, I'm a small business person myself, and I just marvel sometimes at the sheer volume of forms that have to be completed every single year for the state, for the county, for the federal government. They want to know everything from the amount of inventory and assets that our business owns to, of course, you know, the income side of things for taxes. If we collect and remit sales tax, there's all those reports to do. You know, if you're a small business owner, then your employees, you have already collected on their behalf and remitted to the government their payroll taxes all year long.
Right.
Well, and you've done that, because if you haven't, you're going to jail. But then at the end of the year, you've got to run those same reports again and just send them in again. I don't understand. The one thing I'm going to try to find out is, why in the world do we require the same report more than one time? Does anybody actually look at this stuff? Is it just left on a desk or sent in some kind of file that is never reviewed? Just the sheer volume. The one thing that I know for certain is that, and I'll shift gears just a little bit, sure, but I'll explain to you, I hope, how this ties in. We have some very dedicated government workers, and we're very lucky to have them. And I will support them, and I'll support them getting the pay increases they need and getting the benefits that they need in order to remain state employees. The one thing that I won't support is trying to figure out how to keep state employees just for the sake of having them there. And sometimes I think a lot of this regulation and these reporting things that we require are more because we've always required them, and it's somebody's job to require them, so we just keep right on asking for them. I hear a considerable amount of frustration from business owners, myself being one, that, you know, we do this all along. We do this right each month. Why in the world do you require so much of us after the fact? You know, this is just a dead weight or a fixed cost on businesses, and I'd like to try to figure out some way to alleviate that.
Well, I'll give you an amen on that, because I know when I sat down to do the, you know, you have to file the W-2 and you have to file the W-3 and the 941 and the 940, and then you got to file the state and you got to go in and do this and you have to do that. And like you said, sales and use tax. Well, which rate is it for this thing? I bought a machine for manufacturing. It's this. And you look down and suddenly, you know, you're spending thousands of dollars a year on just having people able to fill out your tax forms and file everything. And it's amazing how complicated it has become to simply pay. I mean, I can't imagine if someone was, you know, a one man or a one woman shop and had a complicated, fairly large business, and they did this in more than one state. I know when I do business across state lines, I always have to think, well, if I'm making a sale in Virginia, do I have to, you know, remit sales tax there? Because you can end up with 50 state tax IDs rather than remit it to the state of North Carolina and North Carolina send it on, you're filing it with different states. And it just, that complexity and that frustration level, and then you get the little notice, and I'll share this. I think I've shared it on the air before, but I kept getting a notice several years ago. I'm going to say it's been about 5 years ago, from the IRS saying I hadn't filed a specific form. I think it was the quarterly 941, and I sent it in again, and I had copies, and I always put return receipt, sign for it type things on it. So I had all of those, and I sent it like 5 times, and I kept getting that notice. And finally, I got somebody on the phone, and I said, how can you possibly be signing for these things and not have them? And he said, oh, we have all of them. And I'm like, okay, then why am I getting this? He goes, oh, we just didn't know if you were allowed to sign it. And I'm like, okay, that's not what the letter said. And who would have changed? I own the company. I've been the person signing it for like 6 years. He goes, well, we just weren't sure, so we thought we'd send and ask for another one. And I'm thinking, yeah, $15 mailing that to you and getting more and more delivery confirmations just because you wouldn't ask the question or you wouldn't look at your records in the IRS that says, yes, this is the person that owns the business, is the president of the business, and signs everything. And I just about blew my top on that one. So it's that kind of stuff that's really frustrating as a business owner. Follow your new employee hires, use E-Verify, you know, all of these different things that come into that, and it just becomes so complex. Add in 1099s and the changes the IRS are making with those, and you don't know. You just don't know some days whether the time you're spending to make a profit is actually worth filling out all those forms.
But, and you're scared. I mean, the government can put you in jail if you mess this up. So
even if you don't mess it up.
Even a smaller business as we are, I'm certain that we lose at least a month, maybe 6 weeks of productivity every year doing nothing but government compliance. I'm certain of that.
Well, and it's not like it's doing anything, because the majority of people out here that are business owners want to do it right. But like you said, that fear that here's the IRS going to come knocking on your door, or we hear the stories of the IRS with businesses around the country that have, you know, lock down their businesses and their bank account because the IRS said something was one way. And the business owner's like in honest effort saying, you know, no, this is it. I filed it accurately. I've tried to do it right. And so, yeah, that fear of filing a form and somebody knocking on the door saying, I'm the IRS and I'm here to help, that shouldn't be there. We shouldn't have this fear of our government because the government's supposed to work for us and our state legislature is supposed to control the federal government for us. So those right. relationships are just critical, I think, to us as Main Street business owners to take some of the fear out of our government and doing business under the government regulations, streamline it. You can't do maybe anything about the federal level, but if we can streamline North Carolina's system of reporting and how to file things and which system you log into to put your report in and all of those different types of things, that at least we would be comfortable knowing we're not going to get a knock on the door if we're trying to do everything right here in North Carolina.
Well, I agree with you. And again, I think that the tax reforms that we've begun, and I said, you know, I said all along, tax reform really wasn't a destination. It was a journey. It was a pursuit. And we tried very hard to work on simplification and tried to, you know the difference, or I'm sure your listeners know the difference between a special tax treatment and a loophole, right? Well, if you're getting it, it's a special tax treatment. If you're not, it's a loophole. And so we... so we've tried to repeal, and in fact have repealed dozens of special tax treatments, trying to make our tax system less complicated, where you don't have to sit down and say, well, am I better to do this or do that? Because it's a lot more uniform. And, you know, the examples you were given, or you were given earlier, if one of your businesses is a retail outlet and one of them is a manufacturing firm, you have two completely different type of tax and regulatory schemes that you've got to comply with when, in fact, you're still in business in North Carolina and providing jobs in North Carolina, and it just shouldn't be that complex. And that's what we're trying to fix.
Well, and to that point, it's like, I know when some of the bakeries came into our area, there were so many regulations on things that were made with a certain type of flour, and because they were grinding their flour, the sales tax code said one thing versus if they had pre-bought the flour and made the product. And I know they had to go talk to a lot of you guys in the legislature about the practicality of when business models change, when we're doing something innovative, we need our regulations and our tax codes to change with us.
And that's exactly right.
And that's just, I mean, it's a challenge because we want innovation. We want home-based businesses. We want things where manufacturing and retail may be located, like you were talking about earlier, not just having the raw agricultural items, but then transforming them into other products and stuff, and then having services around those. When we look at a tax code and it's 6 inches thick just for sales and use tax, and it's if, then, else, otherwise, it's really frustrating for the businesses, and we pretty much know if we're going to get a sales and use tax audit, unless you're selling one thing with a specific sales tax code, and you know you've probably made a mistake during the year in collecting and remitting. And the more complicated your inventory is or your manufacturing process, or if you sell manufacturing equipment plus you manufacture the equipment for your own use, you just get into this complicated factor. And I always say if the government's running in the red, the first thing they're going to audit is sales and use tax, because they're going to always find something, and it's going to ripple effect to your vendors, to your customers, and that gives them more threads to follow in their audits, which we want to be compliant, but we need to make it so it doesn't take a degree in sales and use tax code to be able to comply, because, again, the majority of us business owners want to do it right. We're willing to pay our share of the taxes and do things. We just don't always know what form it is when legislations change and all of that kind of stuff. And if it was just, I dream of something that's like 10 pages long in normal English that tells me, here's the 300 things I have to do. Just bullet point them. They're fine. But don't tell me if, then, else, otherwise.
Well, you're right. And the only thing that I would add to the conversation there is, again, that's where we hope to get to. But each time you make a change, you know, the only thing people fear more than the current system is changing. And that's what we find is whenever we say, okay, we can really simplify this if we do X, Y, and Z, everybody says, oh, we are with you. We're going to back you 100%. Just don't touch X. Then you got another group that says, oh, man, that is brilliant. Just don't touch Y. And then you've got a third group that says, maybe we shouldn't mess with Z there. So we know where we need to get. We need to become more of a consumption-based. I mean, we are a consumption-based economy. We need to figure out how we can tax what we consume and not tax what we save and invest and donate to charity. You know, there's only three things you can do with money. You can spend it, which is consumption.
Right.
You can save it, which would include investment in your business, in your retirement account, in education. Or you can give it away to a charitable organization. There's only three things when it comes down to it that you can do with your money. A tax system that encourages savings and investment does not penalize charitable giving, but truly taxes what people use, what they consume. It's the only way to truly build a fair way to tax. And so that's where we're driving towards. That's where we're trying to get to. But it has been a huge feat to get as far as we have, and we just got to keep working towards that.
Well, as a business owner yourself and the regulations, you're in agriculture and tobacco, and that's even more regulations. We have things like fracking and things in the state that everyone's debating. We have the coal burning plants and coal ash issues. How is the legislature working through those issues, as you said earlier, to make sure we're able to grow and we're able to innovate, but we're also able to protect, you know, our environment and our people?
Well, the short answer to that very important question is we believe that numerous safeguards exist. Many of them piloted through the EPA or other federal agencies that make clear what is and is not a safe thing to do. Well, North Carolina, the best thing it can do for its citizens and its business owners is obviously don't do anything less than what the federal government requires, because that's silly. I mean, under our system of government, the federal government is the superior branch of government. But don't do that much different or more either, because that's just, as you said in your remarks, that's just another set of books, another set of regulations that you've got to keep. You know, have one standard of excellence that the feds enforce, the state enforces, and the locals enforce. Don't have three or four that overlap and contradict. And that's where the frustration comes when you've got, say, OSHA inspector telling you to do one thing, and this is just an example, and the Department of Labor in the state telling you to do something different, and perhaps a county building inspector telling you to do something else. What are you supposed to do? You do whatever they say when they walk in the door, I guess. But you know, if we have more uniform standards and have government that makes sense and talks with each other, and also with, as you said earlier, with the taxpayer, they don't just mail out a form without even reading it or considering the impact it's going to have when it arrives in your mailbox, then we can get government. I don't know that I believe that government can ever really foster innovation, but it can do a whole heck of a lot more than it's doing not to impair it.
I agree. But the concern I think of when we say the EPA anymore is we have a lot of, I'll call it guidance to be kind. issued by the EPA that is not within the scope of the law that Congress passes, the overreach, the setbacks from, you know, streams and where we can build and where we can't build now near water systems in different states. And we just see this creeping control of the federal government trying to say that to the citizens and to the states, no, we are, you know, the governing entity. And that balance is something I think I'm concerned about, and different business associates and clients are concerned about, and just private citizens, and that saying, okay, if the federal government is this superior regulator, but when they're not listening to the people and when they're passing law by the writing of a pen and not truly going through the congressional system, how can we get our legislators to push back on that and kind of stop that overreach?
Well, I think you've seen some of that. I think you've seen the governor and the legislature. We filed suit. We joined in suits against the federal government to try and fix that. And just to be a little clear on what I was trying to say, I completely agree with you that many of the federal regulations go too far, that they're passed, as I said earlier in this interview, by unelected bureaucrats.
Amen.
I'm just trying to take the perspective of the person on the ground trying their best to create jobs, to make things happen. And the least we could do is not confuse them. I mean, until a court rules or the federal government repeals its regulation, the regulation is what it is. And so we don't need to give two or three different standards. We need to try to have a uniform standard that a business can strive towards and meet. And you just have one compliance person. You don't have to have three or four.
Right.
It's all about trying to be more transparent, more open, to make business make sense. I mean, to make government regulations make sense for business.
Excellent point. I mean, it's a challenge to know. I do a lot of government contract and grant compliance consulting, and we get in there and we will have funding coming from the federal government, and say they have funding coming from Department of Defense and Health and Human Services, and the auditors show up and there's two different, they interpret the regs two different ways, or they tell somebody to do something that's actually against the law, and that's always concerning, because how well trained are our, I'll call them the middle management and the front lines of our government employees? Because we also see that happening with budgets tight, regulations changing so frequently, laws changing. How can we educate our government workers, our government resources, to be more effective in their jobs and less having less differences in the interpretation when they're out in the field?
Well, this will probably be a controversial answer, but the answer is you've got to recruit and retain the very best people in the individual fields and not have any kind of arbitrary hiring criteria or any kind of hiring quotas that you're trying to meet. The most I hear from my farmer colleagues is, somebody from the Department of Ag or the U.S. Department of Labor or something like that came out to my farm. Certainly welcome them. It was their first job, and they grew up on the West Coast and had never even seen X, Y, or Z that I've grown before. And, you know, the entire time, you know, that's the power that the government has. They can fine you, and then you can appeal. You know, in a court, in a criminal court, you're considered to be innocent unless you're proven guilty. Under the way these federal inspectors work, when they leave, they find you. So you can consider yourself guilty, and then it's up to you if you want to go and try and fight that or appeal that and prove that you didn't do anything wrong. It's a huge amount of power and authority, exactly as you said, that have been shifted to frontline or even to middle management folks who don't even feel that they are accountable in large part to the people through their elected representatives.
And I mean, and it's sad, because I know we have government auditors come into clients that they're auditing accounting and financial systems, and at best they might have 10 hours of accounting. Again, like you were saying, They've never held a job in the private sector. They've never done accounting. They don't even know how to look at the accounting records. And I'll argue most of them don't know a debit from a credit, it seems like, lately. And when you're sitting down with them and you're having to explain to them actually even the terminology of the federal regulations, it's really not just disappointing, but it's disheartening to the person that's there and trying to do it right and spending so much time and money on the regulations and the compliance, because compliance is not cheap for small businesses or any size of business. And to challenge a finding and a fine, I mean, that's, you know, 5 or 6 figures easy of a legal bill for small, and a lot of small businesses can't survive fighting a fine from the government even when they had done nothing wrong.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's really, a lot of times you're in a complete catch-22 situation. Either you sacrifice what little bit of profit you make and pay the fine, or you take that same amount of money and fight the fine, but you still may wind up having to pay it. I mean, it is a real threat that, and again, I don't want to get too far off the rail here. Nobody wants to have dirty water and dirty air, and any employer worth a salt is not going to put their employees in a situation where they might get harmed, because if they get harmed, they can't work, and if you didn't need them to work, you wouldn't have hired them in the first place.
Right.
So, you know, but oftentimes, you know, we've got folks who believe it's my job to inspect this particular widget, and this, in my mind, this widget's the only thing that pays my own mortgage back home, so I think it's the most important thing in the world, and if the widget's not exactly like I think it has to be, no matter where everything else stands, then it's a problem. So, you're absolutely right. In fact, we need to have you come up and speak, if you would,
to
oversight committees at some point, but the regulatory cost in itself is prohibitive for folks that want to do business. And then, Lord forbid, if you've got to actually fight one of these fines, you still can't stop your regulatory expense that you're having to spend. Then you got to go out and hire another CPA or get your lawyer involved to try and say, hey, we were doing this right. I mean, it's just a real, real problem.
Well, I would love to speak to the oversight guys, because it's just an ongoing concern of we can be well-versed in our business and someone comes in and says, oh, no, you can't do it that way, and I'm a 20-something, I've never worked, but I get to decide how your business is going to run, and that is just incredibly frustrating. I can use one example for a client here in North Carolina. They'd been in business 30 years, decided to do a government project, and they were doing well. Everything was compliant. We had fixed everything up exactly the way it was supposed to be, and the government auditor came in and experienced a new person and suddenly told them, well, no, you have to do this, and they were manufacturing equipment for other manufacturers, and he wanted everything that was ordered just in time to be treated as if it was like a federal grant. I'm like, that's not how it works. They don't keep inventory. They manufacture custom. And you go through this, and we ended up going through the process. We had to hire independent CPAs to come in and audit. They ended up having to bring their lawyer in. And so $100,000 later, the client is compliant. Everybody says they're compliant, but their $100,000 of profit just went out the door because of some regulator, I'll put it kindly, coming in and not really knowing what they're doing. And that is so frustrating to watch that, because that was $100,000 that could have gone to expanding the business. It's $100,000 that could have gone to the employees and profit sharing. And instead, it was non-innovative, non-productive money spent. I'm sure the lawyers and the accountants liked it, and they ultimately spent it too, but from a business standpoint, it was not where they wanted to spend that $100,000.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to do in my service to the General Assembly that I've not been able to figure out how to do is, if an action like that is initiated by the government, and in fact it's found out that it simply was the government's misunderstanding, or the bottom line is no public purpose was ever actually served by what they have what they ask a business to do or comply with, I think there ought to be some kind of recourse for the business owner to be able to go back and say, hey, you know, we spent $100,000 to prove to you that we were already doing what you'd ask us to do. We want that back. And, you know, I know loser pays is not the American way in the legal system, but sometimes I think maybe it should be.
Well, I think a lot of people would second guess their actions as a government employee in doing that. They would step back and ask for more advice at a higher level before they would take massive actions that was like in that instance. And it's interesting to watch because the government regulations actually says if you end up in a legal matter, that's not recoverable in their contracts or their grants. And so here it is. It ends up getting passed on to the customers on the commercial side, and it's just a fact of life. As a business, when you have those costs, you're going to have to pass those costs through in your cost structure. But the one group that didn't have to pay any of those costs, even in recovery of the cost of doing business, was the government who originated the problem. So, David,
that's exactly right.
We have about 7 minutes left, so I want to give you kind of an open mic to talk about the issues that you want to address for Harnett County and the state going forward, and just what's at the top of your list, and if you had a magic wand, what would happen in this next legislative session?
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you having me on your show and look forward to perhaps being able to do it again in the future. I want to try to create an environment to where the people of Harnett County can truly be able to live up to all they have inside of them. And, you know, it's a very complicated task that we face in trying to do that. I do believe firmly in trying to continue down the road of our tax reform, where we reduce the rate at which we tax, we simplify the things that we tax and how we collect and submit that tax, and we broaden the base. We tax more things, but at a lesser rate. You know, as I said earlier in the interview, there's only three things you can do with your money. You can consume it, spend it, or you can invest it, which would include putting it in a savings account for your retirement, putting it in the bank to save, putting your kids' college savings account, or even, you know, spending it yourself to educate and train yourself. So that'd be two. And three would be you can give it away to charity. And I'd like to see us get to the point where we truly tax what people consume, what they use, and that we don't tax those things that they don't. So I will continue to push for tax reform that gives us lower rates and a broader base and additional simplification. I'm also going to continue to push to invest in and support education. I want our kids, be it in the K-12 system or the community college system or the university system, to be able to choose what best works for them to meet their unique needs. With that said, I am a big believer in our traditional public schools. I think we expect more of our classroom teachers than we ever have before. I think the amount of testing that is required on its face is ridiculous, but I think the amount of stress and the amount of practice tests that we make the kids do to get ready to take the test make learning it completely gets in the way of a kid being able to learn what they need to know. I want to see, you know, one of the things, and I'll be candid with you, it was a bipartisan effort. You know, we passed a rule that we passed a law in the state, kind of goes along with some things you were saying earlier, that said if the test wasn't required by the federal government, that we would do away with it. And that law passed, and by golly, we did. And the next year, the Department of Public Instruction rolls out things that it calls assessments. Now they look like a test and they act like a test, but they're not called a test. Certainly, that violates the spirit of what we were trying to do. So, I want to be able to pay our teachers more, but I want to give them time to teach too. I think that's a big thing, and I'm going to continue to push for you know, having the best public schools we can have, but also understanding there are certain circumstances where a parent may choose to educate their child in another setting. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'll continue to support educational freedom on that front too. I also will continue, you know, as I said before, Harnett County includes part of Fort Bragg and certainly is a big border county to Fort Bragg. I want to make sure that we continue to invest in our service people that are active duty, but also those that are either retiring or leaving out, you know, or moving on. I'm very proud of the work that we've done that recognizes the military experience and translates that into practical licensing experience. In other words, if you're trained to be a military policeman, you're probably able to be a local policeman and get a job. If the military trained you to drive a truck under those federal standards that we talked about before, you're probably qualified to drive a truck in North Carolina. If you're trained to be a dental hygienist, I mean, the list goes on and on. I'd like to see us continue to work to streamline and to mirror our state licensing requirements for different occupations along with what folks have already been trained to do in the military. So those are three of the things that I guess I'll continue to work on when we return into the session.
Well, that's great. And I want to thank you, David, for being on the air with us today. And you are invited to come back anytime to talk about any topic that's affecting Main Street and our small businesses and our economy. And if we can help you here at any time, just give us a call.
Thanks much. I look forward to it. And keep up the good work. Keep up the work in educating folks. We all have our whole lives invested in making sure that our republic continues to succeed. And it's by having educated folks like the ones that you talk to involved that we'll get there. So thanks again for the chance to be with you.
All right, David, thank you. And you're listening to WCOM-FM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And I'm going to play our music to let us go out. And I want to let everyone know that WCOM is community-funded radio and that we need your help to stay on the air. And so if you want to become an underwriter or a Golden Voice sponsor of WCOM-FM, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, just visit our website, WCOMFM.org. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things. WCOM-FM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your community radio station. That's WCOMFM.org. We're on the air because you care and you underwrite our programs. Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. That's focusresourcesinc.com.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. To be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to
the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A. Well, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.